Dr. Wilsey graduated from the University of Miami School of Medicine and completed residency training in pediatrics and fellowship training in pediatric gastroenterology, hepatology, and nutrition at Texas Children's Hospital and the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. He is a professor of pediatrics at the Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. He currently serves as the director of interventional endoscopy and the vice chief of the Department of Pediatric Gastroenterology. He is also the former chief of medical staff at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital in St. Petersburg, Florida. He has authored over 100 publications and is an associate editor for the Journal of Pediatric Gastroenterology and Nutrition. He is a reviewer for several medical journals and has been nominated numerous times for teaching excellence.
I'm Michael Wilsey. I'm professor of pediatrics at Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine. I'm director of interventional endoscopy and vice chair of pediatric gastroenterology at Johns Hopkins All Children's Hospital. I'm going to talk to you today about interventional endoscopy in children, particularly pediatric pancreatic disorders. And these are my disclosures. And our objectives today are to recognize indications for pediatric ERCP and EUS. We're going to describe the anatomic and physiologic conditions and considerations specific to children undergoing EUS and ERCP. We're going to identify the equipment and techniques for interventional endoscopy in kids and discuss diagnostic and therapeutic interventions in evaluating pancreatic and biliary disorders. But so first, we're going to review the fundamentals. So what exactly does ERCP stand for? Endoscopic refers to the use of an endoscope. Retrograde refers to advancing the endoscope against the direction of bile and pancreatic flow. And cholangiopancreatography refers to imaging of the bile and pancreatic ducts. So how does ERCP differ from standard endoscopy? I think everyone's familiar with the standard endoscope as shown on the right. You know, you have two light sources, you have a camera, and then you have a channel. Whereas an ERCP is a side viewing duodenoscope. It has an elevator as shown. Here's a balloon and a catheter along with a guide wire through, and it's side viewing. So you can't see where you're going. It's like driving through the neighborhood and looking out the sideways. So you have to know the anatomy very well. And when do you consider doing an ERCP? When you have problems with liver disease, biliary disease, and pancreatic disorders. We're going to talk about those indications. And so the use of the endoscope and fluoroscopy. So here's an image of the bile duct full of gallstones, the biliary tree of the right and left intrahepatic ducts, as well as the pancreatic duct that crosses midline. So what is endoscopic ultrasound? It's an endoscope with an ultrasound transducer. As shown in the picture, a transducer on top of an endoscope provides high resolution luminal imaging. And the applications, of course, are for pancreatitis, acute, chronic, as well as pancreatic masses and cysts. The biliary tree, you can examine the ampulla of Vater well as along with the gallbladder. Organs outside the luminal cavity. So you can do ultrasound transduction. You know, for the liver, spleen, adrenal glands, and kidney, subepithelial lesions within the lumen itself, and lymph nodes and vasculature and the mediastinum in some cases. You know, technical capabilities, you can adjust the frequency for both near and deep structures, high resolution tissue characterization, as well as color Doppler flow for vessel detection and flow. Pediatric considerations, scope size relative to the anatomy determines the feasibility of doing ERCP in kids. There's the radial transducer linear, the endoscopic, the EBUS, as well as the new mini probe. And so the EUS equipment, you know, radial ultrasound transducer has radial the cross-sectional imaging. So when you look at those images, it's like a CT scan when you look at cross-sectional imaging, whereas a linear transducer has a different approach. And so the radial scopes, about 11.8 millimeters, similar to an ERCP scope. By convention, a neonatal endoscope is 5.9 millimeters. An adult endoscope is roughly 9 millimeters, whether it's the 8.8 or the 9.2. And the linear scopes, you're able to have therapeutic capability. Radial scopes, whether it's the basic radial scope or the mini probe, which is a through the scope ultrasound catheter, are typically diagnostic. Whereas the EBUS, you know, is 6.9 millimeters and 2.2. So you need a working channel of about 2.8 to be able to get the scope through for the mini probe. And again, no therapeutic capability. So let's talk a little bit about echogenicity, right? And when we think about ultrasound, we think about shades of gray, right? Anechoic, it means no echoes. And so when you send out that ultrasound, it keeps going, echo, echo, echo. And so oftentimes black means fluid-filled, a cyst. So at the top is a cyst, and at the bottom of the screen, you can see the superior mesenteric artery and the celiac take off. Hypoechoic, which means a little bit of echoes. And whenever you see hypoechoic lesions in the pancreas, you worry. You know, if you're Arnold, you say it's not a tumor, but hypoechoic lesions in the pancreas are malignancy until proven otherwise. And hyperechoic lesions are typically fat and fibrosis. And when you see shadowing, you know, that can be a stone, especially if it's a clear shadow like this in the bottom right-hand corner. If it's a dirty shadow, can be air. So why is ERCP useful? Because you get to do stuff. That's the exciting part of it about being an interventional endoscopist, right? So on the left, here's the diagram of gallstones, and gallstones, when you have marbles in the marble bag, sometimes they fall out. And it can cause biliary obstruction, common bile duct stone, choledochal lymphiasis. And then if it gets into the common channel, right, that's where the pancreatic and the biliary tree combine. Well, then you get back pressure up the biliary tree and in the pancreatic tree. So you can get gallstone pancreatitis. And on the right is a patient of mine who has an impacted common bile duct stone. And when the patient's in the, when you bring the stone, it's like a baby who is crowning, you know, and it's, there's so much excitement. And there's the outcome is uncertain. And so we're trying to, how can we deliver this baby, this big yellow everlasting gobstopper that's stuck? You know, can we get a wire through? Can we do incisional therapy? You know, can we cut through freehand with a needle knife? Can we push it back manually and then be able to get a balloon around it to pull it through? So ideally, we try the wire first, and in this case, we're successful. You can see the sphincterotomy, you know, and then the baby comes out, and confetti falls from the sky, and you know, it's a tear, you know, and the nurses cheer. It is pocket of enthusiasm. And you can see it right, this cholesterol stone. And that's typically what we see in adults. 30 years ago, when we did ERCP, we only saw hemolytic stones in children, patients that had thalassemia, sickle cell disease. 30 years later, in the middle of obesity, I think we have cholesterol stones. And those are caused, of course, by high estrogen states. And in teenagers, we typically see menarche, pregnancy, oral contraceptives, and rapid weight gain. And so when there's combinations thereof, you get cholesterol supersaturation with microlithiasis and crystals and then small stones and then larger stones like this. And anytime you have a gallstone, you can have a complication, right? So you can get irritation of the gallbladder, you get biliary colic. Ask any of your friends or family if they have biliary colic, you know, fatty food intolerance. I got a cheeseburger and it hurts right here, chicken wings and it hurts right here, choledochal lymphiasis, biliary obstruction. And if it becomes infected, cholangitis and gallstone pancreatitis. And I know what you're thinking. You know, the chair of the NPF Fellows Committee would say, Mike, well, what about the pancreas, right? But the, you know, the pancreas and biliary tree are related. And that's why we're having this talk. Well, they're not quite related. They're more like stepbrothers, right? Stepbrothers live together, but they're not related. And sometimes they play nice, sometimes they don't. And sometimes they cause trouble with one another because they have completely different digestive functions. And on the left here, you can see the common bile duct coming through the pancreas. So the bile duct and the pancreatic duct share a common a space within the pancreas. It's like they share a bedroom, like stepbrothers. And then at the end of the hall, what's at the end of the hall, the boys' room, is the bathroom, right? That's where the conversions. And typically as an interventional endoscopist, we get called in the middle of the night, right? Because there's a stone. And you're like, all right, who clogged up the toilet, right? Is it you, pancreas? Is it you, biliary tree? And they call us to come in to try to relieve the obstruction. So here's a case to illustrate. So a patient presented with a 10-year-old girl, previously healthy with jaundice and abdominal pain. She was a tall girl, poor weight gain, 74th percentile for height, 20th percentile for weight. Her BMI was less than the fifth percentile. She had scleral icterus. She had right upper quadrant pain. She had jaundice and biliary obstruction. Right. And so we did screening, laboratory evaluation, total and direct bilirubin elevated, GGT elevated. She had cholestasis. And she had transaminitis. Her lipase was elevated a little bit. So what did we do next? We got some imaging. CT scan, well, went through the ER, so got a CT scan, right? At common bile duct dilated to 7 millimeters. PD dilated to 8.8. That's unusual. And so then we got an MRCP. Interestingly, no gallstones, no mass, but a 14 by 3 millimeter filling defect in the pancreatic duct. So we did an ERCP. In the image study on the left, you can see the common bile duct looks pretty good. No strictures. Sometimes kids with pancreatitis can get inflammatory strictures at the distal duct. Uncontrolled, unrelenting inflammation leads to fibrosis and stricturing, but the common bile duct looked great. And no stones, no obstruction, no stricture. Now, when we cannulated the pancreatic duct, you can see the stone right here with the arrow in the middle, and also a beaded appearance to a dilated common bile duct that we see with chronic pancreatitis. And of course, we went ahead and we ballooned and removed several stones. Unlike cholesterol stones, which are waxy, greasy, they're a little more friable, they look like everlasting gobstoppers. Pancreatic stones are hard, calcified, proteinaceous. So they're very different, both in texture, color, and size. All right. And so in this case, obstructive jaundice's atypical presentation of pancreatic stones occurs when the common channel, right, that duct is obstructed. The pancreas is blocking the distal common bile duct. And pancreatic stones common in adults, anywhere from about two-thirds to 70% of adults with chronic pancreatitis will have stones, unusual in kids, but they do occur in the setting of chronic pancreatitis. All right, and this is what it looks like, right? On the left is a diagram, on the right is a patient of mine with chronic pancreatitis, and you see this proteinaceous material. At first you think, boy, is that purulent material? No, you know, these are pancreatic proteins. And then we went in, did an incisional therapy. You know, when we do our surgery rotations, they don't mess with the pancreas unless they're having chronic pancreatitis, right? So then you have to relieve the obstruction. And these are several stones you can see in the top, and then on the bottom left here, we were able to reestablish the lumen. We put in a pancreatic stent. And so what else is ARCP useful for? Well, you can put a stent. So patients who crack their pancreas, right? Handlebar injury, motor vehicle accident, trauma. I had a little one who got onto a, two boys who got into a construction site and they were playing Marvel superheroes jumping. And one kid jumped onto a front loader, you know, and cracked his pancreas. And so here's a leak, and you can put a stent across to help. If you're like, ideally, you want to try to get a wire through, and then you can put a stent across so that the duct can heal over it. But even if you don't get the wire across, if you're able to open up the pancreatic duct, it can help promote flow downstream and help facilitate healing after pancreatic trauma. Why is EUS useful? Because you get to diagnose things, right? As we talked about, high resolution imaging, acute pancreatitis, chronic pancreatitis, cystic lesions, autoimmune pancreatitis, ductal anomalies, and masses, of course, right? Those hyperechoic lesions are always worrisome. But also therapeutic options, walled off necrosis or pseudocyst drainage. You know, pancreatic pseudocyst drainage has better outcomes, et cetera, than external drainage. Celiac plexus block and neurolysis, particularly in our patients with malignancy. Biliary and pancreatic access rendezvous procedures. So when you can't access the biliary duct, you can use EOS to access the duct into a rendezvous procedure. And on the left, a recent societal publication, Quinn Liu led a lot of, and the pancreas and endoscopy committees on the role of EOS and ERCP in treatment of chronic pancreatitis. And then currently, I'm chair of the pancreas committee, so NASPGHM and ESPGHM are looking to update that position paper for all the pancreatitis, acute and chronic pancreatitis. So stay tuned in the next, more to come. So lumenoposal metal stents, this has changed the management of pancreatic pseudocyst. And it looks like a barbell, right? And so you have one lumen. So what you do is you try to get the stent across through the stomach into the cyst. And then you release one end, so the barbell is on the inside, and then it releases so one in the pancreatic cyst and then one in the stomach, and it's lumen opposing. And they come in different sizes. They come in different saddle lengths, usually 10, and the luminal diameter can be 10 to 20 French. So here's a video courtesy of David Vitale. So you see the needle, it's going in, boom, into the cyst. Oh, deploy the first part of the lumen. And then on the bottom left is the endoscopic view. So deploy, deploy, deploy. It's pulling back into the stomach. And here's the endoscopic view. You pull back and boom, here's the second part. And when you are able to open, start draining this cyst, We'll go ahead and put a balloon to try to open up the cyst. It's so gross, but it's so satisfying. It's like Dr. Pimple Popper, right? You're able to, it's like lancing an abscess, and it's so satisfying. And so David put in a double pigtail stent as well to try to keep this on the diagram. You can see the lumen opposing metal stent, this barbell, and then a double pigtail stent to help keep that lumen from occluding, allow drainage. So in summary, ERCP for pancreatic disorders, diagnosis of bile and pancreatic ducts disorders, treatment of common bile duct and pancreatic stones, strictures, devisum, and may have a role in pseudocyst. Diagnostic ERCP, less common nowadays with better imaging modality and with endoscopic ultrasound. And ERCP is reserved mainly for therapeutic intervention, safely performed in children under 10 kilos, which is 22 pounds, around a 2-year-old or less. Endoscopic ultrasound, high-resolution imaging for precise diagnosis, particularly smaller lesions, evaluate pancreatic mass, cystic lesions, congenital anomalies, and chronic pancreatitis. EOS can help guide tissue biopsies and assess the pancreatic ducts for signs of chronic pancreatitis and obstruction. Minimally invasive, but requires specialized expertise. Performed in children 15 kilos and above. And the collaborative approach, you know, we need multidisciplinary care involving pediatric gastroenterologists, radiologists, surgeons, and referring physicians, and consideration for non-invasive imaging before turning to EOS and ERCP, and individualized treatment plans for children, right? Based on regional expertise and multi-center collaborations and prospective data are needed in pediatrics. Thank you.